Actually, now that you mention it, that makes a lot of sense. It's pretty obvious. Like, alcohol is so in your face bad for fat loss. It's like, dude, I would be like, I can have all of this food that actually feels like I'm eating something and tastes good if I just get rid of like a little bit of drinking because of the caloric density of alcohol. You get more food, which is always big when you're dieting, because most people hate dieting because they're fucking hungry.
Yeah.
To me, it's so obvious. And like, that's why I want to shine a big spotlight on it, because I think it'll help a lot of people have easier and better results, which will make them happy and feel like, hey, I'm more engaged and I'm seeing progress and my fitness is coming easier to me and I'm sleeping better and I'm feeling better and I might not die as soon. Like, whoo, this is awesome.
Welcome to Cut the Crap with Beth and Matt, the world's number one no bullshit health and fitness podcast.
Are you ready to cut the crap with your diet and exercise, get strong as fuck, and build a healthy relationship with food? Then you've come to the right place.
Let's go.
If you'd like to support us in the podcast, join our Patreon, where you get exclusive content, which consists of monthly workouts you can do at home or at the gym, monthly challenges that are either strength, habit, or mindset based, and access to over 100 plus low calorie, high protein, family friendly meals. These are all designed by a professional chef who is certified in nutrition. These recipes are already in MyFitnessPal for easy fucking tracking. New recipes are also added each week.
We believe that fitness is for everyone, so this is our way of getting you started on your health and fitness journey at a price most everyone can afford. So what the fuck are you waiting for? We'll see you in the Patreon. All right, Danny, how's it going, man? It's always so awesome to chat with you today.
Yeah,
it's going really good. I just did a podcast before this and the last guy asked the same question. I was like, honestly, it's been a hell of a good day. Like, I went to my studio where I see clients and we have some PT patients, and I worked with two people, had a sick upper body workout, came home and just talked shop. I'm literally just talking fitness the rest of the day. So if you actually think about like how my day's gone, it's as close to like perfect as it can get. I worked out, talking fitness. It's like, I have that's what I do in a day. That's crazy. So hella good day, sir. Yeah.
I know. Isn't it cool? Like we have the best fucking jobs in the world that we do fitness for a living. We talk fitness for a living. We help people with their fitness for a living. Like, it's, we're pretty fucking blessed.
It's pretty rewarding.
When I stop and actually think about it, it makes every day a little better. Cause I'm like, damn, this is way better than many of the alternatives.
Cause I've had a lot of those alternatives and thank you. I don't ever want to work for somebody else again. So.
Yeah. 100%. I mean, I'm thinking about my bartending days. What a fucking shit show. I'm so glad I don't have bartended for like 20 years. What a toxic environment. I mean, talk about like, wow.
Well, I'm lucky. This is all I've ever done. Like, this is the only real job I've ever had. Like, I started personal training when I was 18 to pay my way through college. And when I was in high school, I would just do odd jobs around people's properties because I grew up in like a super rural area. So you didn't need to have a job. If you were strong, you could just go do tasks for cash. Yeah. And then when I went to school, I was like, shit, the only thing I know about is working out. And the only thing I care about is working out. So I got to find a way to get paid doing this. And my like first ever job was training at 24-hour fitness. So I've never technically not done this. So
I feel
very insulated from like having ever had a job I hated. Mm-hmm. And I cannot imagine. I'd probably have horrible, horrible health. Even physical health, if at any point in my life I had a job I hated. That's one of those things where I'm super lucky for when people ask, how do you stay in shape? I have a job that doesn't suck. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Danny, do you own a gym?
Yeah, I do. I do. Okay. It's a PT clinic studio. So like, because I started with in-person training, I've always done in-person training.
Yep.
And I can't imagine not doing that. But like Matt said, I used to have a boss, and the minute I didn't have a boss, I was like, fuck having a boss ever again. I don't know how I did that for as long as I did. And I had cool like trainer managers, like they were cool dudes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The minute I didn't have to answer to anybody, I was like, this is so sick. And I wanted a space in the middle of the pandemic. Everything was so affordable for leasing spaces and well, the only shit that was really expensive was the weight equipment because everybody right. was buying it. But I was like, this is just
triple the price.
It's such a good time. Everybody's scared right now. And like Warren Buffett always says, you should be greedy when others are fearful and fearful when others are greedy. And I was like, everybody's afraid. They don't know what to do in fitness. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like jumping online, which is dope. But I'm going to go find a space, even out here in California where we had some restrictions. Mm-hmm. That's perfect. That's what I've always wanted. And I found like the best space and my best friend's a physical therapist. And I'm like, dude, imagine what we could do if we put our minds together on this space and built a place where people could come and work out and recover from injury all in one. And it just came together. The timing was perfect. It mm-hmm. it felt terrible and scary, but it was actually perfect. So yeah, I've had my own gym. This will be year three. It's badass. I love it.
That's so awesome. You decided to open a gym or start to in the middle of a pandemic when most people were getting shit-faced. Yeah. And so I love that because that's when I started Beth Rocco Fitness. I just dove in like because I was an in-person trainer.
Yeah.
And then the gym got shut down. I was like, fuck, you know, let's just do it. And yeah. then I haven't stopped.
Right? I think it's just what made sense. I had anxiety and stress mm-hmm. and I fucking wanted to do something. And my dad, my father was an entrepreneur. And I remember I called him on the first day of COVID. I said, Dad, what the fuck am I going to do? Like the world apparently is going to end. Mm-hmm. I guess all my old clients are going to die. I'm not sure. I got to go get some toilet paper. And like, I just said, I'm scared. I don't know what to do. And I never call my parents for help. I just don't. Mm-hmm. And that's like one time in my life where I was like, I got to get my dad on the phone. And he just told me, he's like, you're young. Everything can burn to the ground and you'll build up again. And I was like, okay. So I had this permission structure to take risks and just say, fuck it. And I noticed there were lots of opportunities, whether it was uh-huh. online or opening your own space, just trying to stick with, you know, some type of progress in the field that I love. And it worked out hella good. And I think it did for most people too.
Yeah. That's amazing.
We're doing what we love. Sometimes it's easy to kind of get distracted from why we started in the first place. And so it's good to hear you say that. And we can start the conversation that way. Like, hey, we're all just grateful as fuck that we're here. And that we have these opportunities and these platforms that we do helping people every day. Like that's really what it's all about. I love that you 100%. Were able to face adversity like that in the middle of the pandemic when everything was shutting down around you and the world was on fire around you. Cause that's kind of what we tell people with their health and fitness too, right? Like the best time is like actually probably the best time to start is when everything's on fire around you.
Yeah.
I agree. If you can do it, then you can do it whenever. And like, man, what sets a alarm off in your body that something's important, like prioritizing it when other shit's happening. Like you're casting such a strong vote for change when you're sticking with hard shit, when there's other shit around you. And you're going to have to do that if you want to be fit because life is just hard. So it's like, mm-hmm. there's no point in only being able to be fit when life's easy because life's not always easy. So why would we even do that shit?
Yeah. It's like, we got trained for life. It's kind of been my motto lately is like training for life. You never mm-hmm. know what it's going to throw at you in terms of your physical fitness, your mental health, just shit that's out of your control. You got to be prepared as best as we can.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Epic.
One thing I love about you, Danny, is the way, and I'm just one, you know, there's more, but the way you are very vocal about alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think a lot of people in the fitness space are as vocal as maybe yourself or myself. So I would love to chat about how that became like a part of like what's important to you to talk about.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And it goes like really deep. I think you and I spoke at an event together about a month ago. And mm-hmm. I talked a little bit about my early alcohol exposure in life, like as a child. Like my dad owned a vineyard, a 5-acre vineyard. And mm-hmm. he started with like that. He was a lawyer by day, but his entrepreneurial thing was this winery. So I grew up around alcohol and my dad drank a lot, but he was mm-hmm. never drunk. I don't have this like super traumatizing abusive alcoholic story that a lot of children who do grow up with alcoholic parents have. But when my dad got married a second time after him and my mom split, he did start seeing somebody who had a pretty like aggressive response when they drank a lot and they chose to drink a lot. So one thing I've seen very close up, not from any of my parents, thankfully, but from people who came into my life, it's like, wow, alcohol can really make a home situation super rough. And so when I left home, when I was 18 and went off to school, I was like, I'm not going to drink in college. I don't like what it does to people. I've seen it. It's not for me. It was never off limits. So I'm not going to go be like, I couldn't drink when I was a kid, so now I'm going to get hammered in college. So right. I literally never got into it. And that is just, again, pure luck. Like I had one nasty alcoholic in my life growing up who, thank God, wasn't one of my parents. Like so many people struggle with that. It really sucks. Not a lot of people talk about it because they don't want to bash on their parents, which is so fair. I get it. But it's really hard to grow up around it and not be disillusioned. And if you don't run out to college and develop a drinking habit when your brain's still neuroplastic, you can make it to like 22, 23 and really see like, whoa, alcohol is crazy. And if you're not like in the matrix, so to speak, if you're not indulging and not partaking, it makes sense to stay abstaining because the health benefits are so strong and the negative health implications of regular use are so bad. I think I just was so fortunate. I had a very clear view of it. I saw what it can do to people right up close and personal. I chose not to use it. And I ended up studying sciences like kinesiology, fitness, and nutrition, where you learn how unhealthy it was. And I became very passionate about sharing that because to me, it's an easy change that a lot of people can make with such a big return. I could talk about it literally forever, but I think the simplest answer is like, I saw it right up close and personal when I was young. I said that is not for me. And when I learned more about the science of how it affects your health, I felt so affirmed in that decision. And I want to share that shit with people because it's made staying healthy for me so much easier, so much easier.
Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the biggest things that holds people back from their goals.
Mm-hmm.
I agree.
I think it's probably the biggest closet addiction in America.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people have alcohol use disorder that they just have normalized. We've been so normalized. They think, and it's glorified, it's normalized. They think two drinks a night isn't bad, but it's like, if you're doing two a night, you're probably an alcoholic. That's fucking 14 a week. That's heavy drinking for you know, like shit. Like, I don't want to label you as something, but you have to just look at the statistics and look at the data and be like, if I have weekly, consistent, annual, excessive behavior in this category, do I qualify as somebody who is addicted to it or has a disordered use pattern? I would say you probably do.
Right.
And trying to be healthy when you are physiologically struggling with a use disorder or just like habitually hung up on something with a lot of calories that fucks up your sleep and makes it really hard not to overeat. It's like, dude, it's like trying to win the 100-meter dash in the Olympics with like no, like missing leg. It's
like, You're making this
so much harder than it has to be. And it's very emotional for people. And
it's such a crutch too for people.
Right.
Life is hard. We already talked about it. Life is really difficult for people. I have so much empathy, man, for the amount of stress and like frustration and agitation and all of the adversity people have in their lives. I know why people turn to these crutches.
Right.
And it's like, that's a crutch that's never going to heal the injury, right? Like alcohol is not, it's only masking it. But I know why people use, and I know why it's scary or hard to give up. And it's just, it's one of those things. I want people to be encouraged to do it for their health. Because you can have a little and be okay. You really can. It's just, you have to realize you're playing the game on hard mode when you're drinking.
Right.
It's like you're playing fat loss on expert difficulty.
Yeah.
It's way harder on expert difficulty. Play on easy mode, please.
Yeah. Let's go through the tutorial first. The I'd do anything to lose fat, but, and you're like, okay, so what does your alcohol intake look like? It's like, maybe we should limit that. I won't do that.
It's like, well, yeah, that's my stress relief. Okay, well, let's look at something else for stress relief then.
No, right?
Can't do that.
I mean, I could go down the rabbit hole and be like, oh, yeah, I too turn to stage one carcinogens to relieve my stress. That is a logical fucking adult decision in a world where you could download a meditation app for $9 a month. You are turning to cancer juice for your fucking stress relief. Mm-hmm. That's a great, totally good choice, like super rational. Yeah. It's like, it is objectively stupid, but you cannot infantilize adults like that, especially me. I'm 28. Like people fucking are not gonna, they're just gonna shit on me and be like, well, when you're my age or when you have kids, like, so you have to be very empathetic, but like, truly the alternatives are plentiful for the relief of stress. And alcohol's got to be the worst choice.
Well, it's got to be. It's one of those things where you're either ready to hear it or not. And that's why it's so polarizing. And you can see this in Beth's content and your content whenever you talk about alcohol. You know, for Beth, it's, oh, well, you're just projecting because you are.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Or, if I lose thousands of followers, and I know this will happen every time I talk about alcohol, I'm like, I don't fucking care. It's time to weed out some people.
Yeah. I do. You know, when I post a picture of my girlfriend or my wife, that happens.
Isn't that crazy?
That's weird.
Yeah.
Or if I start talking about
for the wrong reason.
Right. If I start talking about like diet soda, comparing that to alcohol, they're like, no, diet soda's worse than alcohol. I'm like, how can you even compare that?
And they legit
get pissed.
Well, it's funny because it's like, here's why we shouldn't compare this. We have a table of known carcinogens. Mm-hmm. And at the top of the big fucking table is alcohol. Way down at the bottom like of the big the fucking
the king,
table.
The king seat, right?
Yeah, way down at the bottom of the fucking table is artificial sweeteners. It's like, hey, holy shit. And the red zone with the giant skull and crossbones is alcohol. And in the probably okay zone is artificial sweeteners. We don't have to speculate on this. The fucking jury is out. Your opinion is dog shit. You are wrong. Mm-hmm. And there is not a fucking, there, the danger level is nowhere near similar. It's,
oh my
God, it is truly undebatable. I'm sorry you're choosing to live in your warped reality, but it's when you're ready to join the adults in the real world, like, there's a seat at the table, but I don't even fuck with those people because they're choosing to believe a lie and it's right in front of their face.
Yeah.
And it's not that hard to do math.
Oh yeah. I love going for throats. I mean, to be honest, it's like, I was one of those people, right? In the midst of my alcoholism, I would give my husband shit for having like ice cream. I mean, imagine. Meanwhile, I'm like downing a bottle of wine. It's really people in denial. That's really what it comes down to. Like, they don't want to admit that they actually do have a problem because that's fucking hard to do.
Well, diet soda. It's the diet soda that's the problem. That's easy to come to terms.
People, actually, I think a lot of the demonization of certain things, seed oils, diet soda, you name it, right? It's just people wanting to imbibe some alternative entity with the responsibility for their suffering. I am not responsible for being overweight. It's the government who I wouldn't listen to. Even if the fucking government gave you your macros, you would fucking whine about it. So you're not going to do that. Oh, I can't trust that shit now. It's like they could tell you to eat a gram of protein per pound of body weight and you wouldn't listen to it anyway,
well,
buddy.
That's funny because we have, people always say, right, the standard American diet has failed us, but nobody's fucking following the standard American diet anyway.
Yeah, if you actually looked, I'm not like standing or like simping for like the institutions of the U.S. federal government by any means, but if you look at the diet and exercise recommendations, they're 50 billion times better than what 90% of people do. And it's like, if you're bitching about the fucking food pyramid, which hasn't been a thing in 20 years, and now we actually have like halfway decent food recommendations, people want to blame something else because taking responsibility is hard as fuck in life. And I bet you a lot of us fit people who are super good at taking responsibility for our health don't take responsibility in other areas of our lives where it doesn't come as natural. And I catch myself doing that shit all the time. I'm like, oh, well, it wasn't my fault that I got a speeding ticket. It's the first of the month. These guys are out here to get their fucking quotas.
Right.
All these guys, they're trying to get out early for spring break with their families. I was a million CHP. It was fucking bullshit, man. Like, it's my third, I've got three speeding tickets in the last year, and it's every single one has been the cop's fault. They were out to get me.
Right.
And I see myself do it and I go, okay, I think we make bad guys out of various nutritional ingredients or categories, because having bad guys and having people we can blame is so much healthier, or you know, not healthier, but easier for us than taking that radical responsibility that leads to way more growth and way more change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Imagine taking responsibility for your actions. Imagine.
Hella hard.
Hella hard.
Can you tell I'm from California, guys?
Hella.
What part of California do you live in?
Northern California.
Okay. Home so San Francisco area.
I'm in Sonoma County, where they grow all the wine.
It's fucking beautiful there.
It is.
It's one of my favorite places to visit.
Anytime you want to come out here and not drink.
Oh, man. So pretty. I lived in LA and San Diego, so.
I love San Diego, but it's San Diego's amazing. Northern California. I'm never leaving.
California, I haven't really explored California too much. It's one of those states. There's a lot, like, I'm just going wherever national parks are. And obviously, there's a lot of national parks out there in Cali. I just haven't been to any of those ones yet. I just got done. I was kind of doing like the Midwest there for a while. And now we're going to Oregon this year together. And then I think I'll probably hit up Cali for some parks.
Yosemite is as advertised, dude. I try to go often. We went like,
fuck yeah, dude,
4 months ago. And it's exquisite. There's
bucket
just like,
list.
Yeah, when you go there, it's one of those things where you ask yourself, why do people even go to Disneyland? Why do people, like, how does anybody go do any of that, like, man-made shit when you're standing here looking at a piece of granite that is breaking your mind? Like, it's like when you look at the Grand Canyon, it doesn't look real. There are a lot of Yosemite, it doesn't even look real. Like, this can't, it's so crazy.
Cut the crab meet and greet. Future meet and greet.
Yeah, I'll go out anytime.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah.
I'm only 3 hours away.
Okay, sick.
Oh, man. Okay.
So I want to go back to the beginning of when we started talking about alcohol, because you said something there and kind of we glossed over it. But you said, like, if you're drinking two drinks a night, like, you're probably an alcoholic. And that was one thing that stood out to me from your talk in Vegas was our recommendations. We talk about the recommendations from the government.
Sure.
What that means from a practical perspective for people listening. And because you have an amazing, incredible take on it. And it was really eye-opening, to say the least.
Yeah,
totally. Okay, so I'm going to use the recommendations set forth by some of the health agencies in the United States government, like the CDC. Mm-hmm. There are some agencies that, like, work together with other countries to provide guidelines, for example, the WHO. And then other countries like Canada will have guidelines that might be way more strict, or other governments might have guidelines that are way less strict. But I think the CDC guidelines are actually pretty good. I think they give us a lot of information about drinking in moderation relative to gender and body weight. And they're a little stark. If you're not familiar with what moderate drinking might look like, you might be surprised to hear that one drink a day for a woman is moderate, and that more than that would be considered excessive, and that just two drinks a day for a man is moderate, and more than two would be considered excessive. And it's important to apply the context of, like, if you were to look at the Canadian guidelines, a man having one drink a week in under those CDC guidelines would be in a safe zone. But in Canada, they would deem seven drinks a week highly dangerous.
One drink a day for a man.
Yes. So this assumes very, very, what I would describe as loose guidelines relative to other countries. So this is me. In the take I'm about to give, I'm baking in a lot of leniency.
Okay.
But yeah, so for chicks, for gals, for girls, it's seven a week, more than seven, you know, more than one a day, basically. And we're talking about moderate alcohol consumption. And I know a lot of women who will do seven every weekend, not during the week, just over the weekend.
On a Saturday night.
Right.
Yeah, and for dudes, it's more than 14. So it's two a day. Mm-hmm. And
I used to be that guy.
Yeah, yeah. That's not hard to do either. Yep. And I think a lot of people who would tell you, like, okay, I'm average. And it's like, okay, you are average, but our average is above moderation, even by our own admittedly high guidelines. Mm-hmm. And so maybe you do aim for that one a day or that two a day, but I wouldn't be so sure that's going to protect you either. It's mm-hmm. just like people are like, damn, that's low. And it's like, not only is that not low, it's quite high relative to other countries, and your consumption is way above that. And I think once people get an idea of like what is appropriate, or rather what is considered excessive, and how culturally we've allowed what our normal is to drift way beyond what is considered to be excessive, it's a little alarming, and it kind of wakes you up, because what you thought of as normal or safe, or I'm not even as bad as my friends, if that's above safe and you're not capable of quitting, I think you could make the argument that you might have a dependence issue, and you could, in fact, maybe be struggling or one day struggle with alcoholism. I don't think that's a crazy take.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't think it's crazy either.
That's not even including like the pours. They're like, oh, what? I'm just having one. Yeah. A fucking bottle of wine and one of your big ass glasses.
One drink. Yeah, one unit, right? Of alcohol. It's not the drink that we're actually having.
What is it, the actual serving?
14 grams, which is not like, if it has
14 grams of alcohol
in a given drink constitutes one serving. So that's how we would say, like, okay, a shot of tequila, 5 ounce glass of wine, and 12 ounce beer at the end of the day all contain roughly 14 grams of alcohol. You get more volume in the beer because it has the lowest alcohol by volume. Mm-hmm. You get less volume in tequila because it has the highest alcohol by volume. But they all count as one drink. And to Beth's point, most people are pouring substantially more than 5 ounces on a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you were a woman and you pour a 7.5 ounce glass of wine a night and call it one glass of wine, you might actually be at 1.5 servings of alcohol per day, which is going to average out to closer to like 10 a week than it is seven. And if you were to look at the Canadian guidelines, you'd be in the like skull and crossbones. You're going to die. This is horrible. Like this, you should not ever have 10 a week. And there, you could think you're drinking in moderation by the US guidelines just by pouring a little too much. And so it's like, that's why I think you have to be mindful and know, like, hey, a 5 ounce pour equals one. And a big glass of wine is probably two.
When the world feels crazy and chaotic, remember that you don't have to. You deserve to take control of your mental and physical health. Cured Nutrition is trying to make it easier for you to do just that. Formulated with their trinity of ingredients, a blend of full-spectrum cannabinoids, functional mushrooms, and adaptogens, Serenity Gummies are your answer to finding the calm in every storm. Cured wants you to feel good about feeling good. They took their time formulating their Serenity Gummies. They left out the artificial flavors, sugars, and dyes, and replaced them with ingredients that actually live up to their clean label, wellnessy word. I've recently started taking Serenity Gummies at night for my nighttime routine to help me get settled after a long, stressful day, and they've been really easing me into a great nighttime sleep. Right now, Cure is extending an exclusive offer to you, our listeners. You can grab a bag of Serenity Gummies for 20% off by visiting www.curednutrition.com/CTC and using the coupon code CTC at checkout. That's curednutrition.com/CTC and coupon code CTC at checkout to save 20%. Protect your peace and pop a gummy.
So, something else you said in the talk in Vegas was the discrepancy between those recommendations. Why is there, in your opinion, such a discrepancy between different government agencies about these recommendations?
Yeah, I think it's just different agencies have different levels of what I would describe as risk tolerance. So like, let's say you're a country where you don't have the infrastructure to support a lot of alcoholism or the downstream effects of lots of alcohol consumption, diabetes, certain cardiovascular disease, a lot of brain disease, a lot of cancer treatment. If you're like, damn, based on our population and based on our alcohol use by population data, like we can't support this. We need to go like full red alert and we need to sound the alarm bell. It's like, it could just be an infrastructure issue where like certain countries like, dude, this is fucking us already. We got to put a stop to this. So I think that's why some countries that are smaller and don't have as much money, frankly, are being more vocal about the effect this is having. And if you have a healthcare system where it's 100% taxpayer funded, you can see situations long term. And we see it here in the US where we're like, damn, the cost of treating obesity is so great that it you know, we have to have some initiatives to lower our cumulative obesity. Like we have to bring that down because the cost of paying for it's going to be way more than the cost of trying to make a difference. Yeah. I think that the same is true with alcoholism. But I wouldn't be surprised or shocked to hear that in America, where we have more relaxed campaign and political finance laws, that certain lobbies, like especially lobbies that are heavily funded by different alcohol companies, were paying good money to make sure that our regulations were some of the loosest and some of the, let's say, widest, because alcohol is a massive, like, multinational
business. Yeah.
Business, but the biggest, baddest players are all right here. Mm-hmm. Paying a lot of money to keep a lot of other things illegal. They've been doing that for a very long time. And alcohol does so much collateral damage in communities and in households that never gets talked about. It's so much worse than every other drug. Probably the exception of fentanyl now, but it's like really that bad. It's that pervasive. There are, I think, special interests that make it so that you can fucking buy it pretty much everywhere. It's
we can get it
always all around. It's a huge
here in Ohio.
Tax
I can get it
revenue
drive through. I can get it from a restaurant to go in a fucking sippy cup, thanks to the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking sippy cup. I can get a fucking tequila slushie.
Damn.
From the drive-through in my car and drink it driving down the road. Obviously, drinking and driving is illegal, but they have no qualms with giving it to me in a fucking sippy cup to take down the road.
All right, now don't drink this. I'm going to give it to you in your
wink,
car.
Wink, wink. Don't drink this in your sippy cup.
All right. And let's take it back to the pandemic when alcohol stores were deemed essential.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Like, what the fuck is that about? You mean, okay, so if you were to shut down all the alcohol stores, you would have mass fucking people going to the hospital for detox? That's insane.
Yeah. It's very plausible. It's also like, I think there was a lot of frustration because, hey, my fitness center is not essential, even though it is a health promoting space. Local BevMo is essential because people are categorizing alcohol as groceries, but it's so obviously a negative on people's health. Like there were so many things that happened during that time period that are in hindsight like stupid.
Yeah,
for sure. That's one of them.
But one thing we know for sure about the pandemic and alcohol consumption is people started drinking way more than they were before, which is crazy because people were drinking a lot before.
Yeah.
And that's another reason why certain data sets might be skewed. Like, we don't know how bad the pandemic drinking is on public health until we get 10 years after, because alcohol's effects are chronic and long-term and not always acute.
Yeah.
Fuck. Well, so from the recommended daily usage or weekly usage, what can we expect in terms of health outcomes if we're consistently going over the recommended amounts?
Cancer, heart disease of various types, although heart disease is probably the least of your worries. Vascular diseases, specifically the neural ones. You know, things that have to do or exist on that dementia spectrum, specifically things like dementia, but even things like Parkinson's disease. I really think the biggest ones are diabetes, cancer.
Yeah.
Just because, like, diabetes is, people don't understand it as a health condition, because, like, you don't, like, if you have diabetes, you'd be like, oh my God, I got diagnosed with diabetes. It doesn't feel like a terminal diagnosis, but it is a lingering metabolic condition that affects so many Americans. It's like high blood pressure. It is so pervasive, and alcohol is terrible for blood sugar regulation, and it's a stage one carcinogen. And those are the two things immediately that I'm like, look, your diabetes risk and your cancer risk are going to be way fucking higher if you are drinking, especially if you're sitting on your ass like most people. And that is the thing, that if you have a nation of unhealthy, metabolically unhealthy people who have diabetes, it places tremendous risk on your health infrastructure, because they become substantially more susceptible to who knows what it could be. That shit ripped through and fucked up a certain subset of people who were metabolically unhealthy relative to So even being normal weight, just having diabetes, or it can be dangerous. And I think alcohol is two biggest red flags: driver of diabetes, driver of obesity, of course, which I think is obviously a huge issue, and driver of cancer. And those are the three big red flag things that outside of heart disease are like, okay, those are the big four: heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and now probably obesity, which you could lump in with diabetes. Alcohol increases your likelihood of developing all of those, mm-hmm. even at what I would describe as moderate levels. But if you go above moderate levels, it's not a shoe-in, but the likelihood of developing these conditions is so much higher.
Mm-hmm. So taking the health perspective, the health equation out of it, because a lot of times people are just like, I just want to lose fat. And then we look at alcohol and how it impacts our fat loss too. And
yeah,
I love what you said in that talk in Vegas too. You're like, we assign our clients macro goals for protein, carbs, and fats, but why don't we assign them macro goals for alcohol? And that's one thing I don't think people listening realize is that alcohol is a macronutrient.
Right, it's a macronutrient.
I teach macros and as part of our mindful eating program, and that's one of the things. Like people, like, what? It's a macro? I'm like, yeah, it's technically a macro. People either just usually tell you to take it from your carbs or fats, right? But
yeah,
you
know,
it's 7 calories per gram.
Exactly. Yeah. Alcohol is its own macro. It's 7 calories per gram. It's metabolized in a different way than the other mm-hmm. macros, the same way that like protein has a unique metabolism pathway compared to carbohydrates.
Yeah.
And you can fit it into your diet. Borrowing from carbs or fats makes sense because on average, 4 and 9 kind of meets in the middle around 7. It's easy to make it fit in your macros. So you can have it and lose body fat, which I never argue with people. You definitely can drink and lose body fat. However, mm-hmm. I think it makes it way harder. I think it's mm-hmm. like play. It ticks the difficulty level of the game up a little bit because alcohol is going to affect your food reward. It tends to upregulate different pathways in the brain associated with food reward. So mm-hmm. it will amplify our desire to eat. A lot of people talk about the drunchies. That's what we call them out here when you get the drunk munchies. Mm-hmm. I joke all the time. No, like nobody's ever in the line at Taco Bell in the college town I live in, but like every Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, the line is so long starting at like 8 or 9 o'clock because mm-hmm. people are already drunk and they're like, fuck, this is a great idea. So like drinking just makes food decisions so weird and so irregular and like mm-hmm. so not conducive for weight loss. It's like, dude,
yeah,
not the drug to use if you want to lose weight. Okay. Yeah. Like there's a lot of good ones for weight loss. Alcohol is not one of them, buddy. And so it's like, I would definitely just put huge stock in how much harder it's going to make sticking to your diet and food decisions. Then there's the more direct pathways. Like obviously alcohol has calories.
Mm-hmm.
People seem to forget that. Mm-hmm. It's going to wreck your sleep. And we know sleep is very closely associated with body composition. More sleep equals better body composition. Mm-hmm. If you are in a deficit with equated protein, meaning you take two groups, you give one 100 grams of protein, you give the other one 100 grams of protein. They both eat 1500 calories. One gets 8 hours of sleep. One gets 6. The group that gets 8 hours holds on to way more muscle, loses way more fat. The group that gets 6 loses more muscle, loses less fat. So if you know alcohol fucks your sleep, it's going to fuck your body composition. So it's like, why would I try to include this if the whole reason for dieting is body composition? This shit is off the table. Like, mm-hmm. obviously a poor return on investment. You know, it's mm-hmm. if we were like sitting down and like carving out a budget and it was like, okay, well, we need $500 at the end of every month. And it was like, well, Bob's spending $499 a month on that fucking quad that he's leasing that he never takes out. Maybe we can cut that. And it's like, actually, now that you mention it, that makes a lot of sense. It's pretty mm-hmm. obvious. Like alcohol is so in your face bad for fat loss. It's like, dude, I would be like, I can have all of this food that actually feels like I'm eating something and tastes good if I just get rid of like a little bit of drinking because of the caloric density of alcohol. You get mm-hmm. more food, which is always big when you're dieting because most people hate dieting because they're fucking hungry.
Yeah.
To me, it's so obvious. And like, that's why I want to shine a big spotlight on it, because I think it'll help a lot of people have easier and better results, which will make them happy and feel like, hey, I'm more engaged and I'm seeing progress and my fitness is coming easier to me and I'm sleeping better and I'm feeling mm-hmm. better and I might not die as soon. Like, whoo, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Very fucking cool, right?
I really wish more people would understand that. When it comes to clients, we have a lot of clients that struggle, and it's very hard when they have such a goal, but that's that one thing that's maybe holding them back and they just don't know how to limit it, or they're afraid if they stop that their husbands,
their life might change, right?
Yeah. There's just so much, crazy, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think when you talk about the drivers of weight gain and you talk about what it would take to overcome this huge obesity epidemic, it is impossible for us to face this without facing the emotional challenges and barriers and relationships in our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think alcohol is people's favorite cope, or one of people's favorite copes. And so it is so hard. And that's one of the things that makes our jobs as coaches really hard, because we cannot fix some of the most broken components of people's lives.
Yeah.
But if alcohol is making them more broken, I don't think it's off base to be like, yo, cool it a little bit there. It's fucking with your goals, and it's making your workouts a little shittier. And
or refer out too, right? Like, hey, you actually might need to go talk with somebody.
Yeah.
You could always do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's super severe. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Danny, if you had a client or have had a client that struggles with alcohol, how would you go about talking to them about that?
Yeah.
What are some strategies that you have for, let's say, coaches that have clients that struggle with alcohol?
I like to relay everything back to the client, which I think is important. So like if you're training an accountant, try to frame it in a way that makes sense to their accounting brain. If you're training a mechanic, try to frame it in a way that makes sense to their mechanic brain. If you feel like this is a personal issue and something that for them, if they get it under control, will really help, but it is, it's a personal thing. Maybe what they're drinking because they have a really high stress work job and that's how they take the edge off. If you come at them with all the fucking shit I just told you, it's not going to work that way.
Right, right. Yeah.
They're going to be like, okay, well, now I'm stressed about dying of my alcohol addiction. So
right.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And so I think it's like, hey, man, you are busting your ass in the gym. Like, you're kicking butt. I see you trying with the diet, but I do think like the drinking might be a little higher than it needs to be. Mm-hmm. And if we can bring that down just a little bit, maybe we can cut it in half for a little bit or try a dry month. Like, we got to play with this, because I think this is one of those things that it'll be like jet fuel for you. If you find a middle ground here, a reasonable intake, or bring it down, you're going to speed things along. And I want things to go faster for you, and then relate it back to them and something that they're passionate about. That's not fitness. Like, oh, this would be like if XYZ happened in that thing you're passionate about. I try not to make it about the challenge of reducing alcohol. I try to make it about the benefits of moderation and just encourage them and point to how it might show up in their life and follow up with it. I highly doubt you're going to tell somebody something once and they're going to be so inspired they don't drink.
Right.
Unless you're really fucking good. But I think it's more about leveling with them and being honest with them about how it's affecting their life and in ways that feel personal and like, oh shit, like I'm so tired today. Oh yeah, dude, did you drink last night? Oh yeah, I did. Oh fuck, you're sick of being tired, man. Let's cut that back. Yeah, I know. All right, let's go. Let's do my workout. But little reminders, encouragements, it happens hella slow. It really does. And once people go long enough without it, they know. I think it takes about 30 days. Maybe sometimes it's even 2 weeks. They're like, holy shit, I'm starting to feel better. Like, this is crazy. Yeah. I was drinking too much.
Yeah. It's just taking that break, like giving the opportunity. Let's do a 7-day challenge. Let's see how you feel.
I will do something with you as your totally human trainer, where I'm totally addicted to this stupid thing that I do. I play whatever. Like, let's say you're a trainer and you play Call of Duty every night.
Mm-hmm.
I won't play Call of Duty for 2 weeks if you don't drink for 2 weeks. You can actually show some fallibility.
That's
and I think
idea,
that's
actually.
Huge for trainers, because people are like, fuck you. Yeah, I get it. You're on your shit, you little puritanical fuck. I get it. You don't drink tap water. You fucking use like baking soda and essential oils for deodorant. You're like, you're perfect. Yeah, yeah. That really works against you. You're better off being like, hey, dude, I have a crippling sports gambling addiction and I will delete those sports gambling apps for 2 weeks if you don't drink for 2 weeks. You're like, all right, let's do it. Fuck it.
Yeah.
You're like, hey, my trainer's human too. And they're not holding it over my head. They're actually on my level. They're
a support system.
They're going to take something on in their own life. You can team up with your clients and show some fallibility and actually drive really good change.
I love that. I have not heard that idea before, to be honest. I don't know why I would have never thought of that.
I feel that a lot of our job is relating to people, and we forget that it's occasionally okay to assume a position of relatability rather than authority in relationships, especially when something's vulnerable and personal, like substance use.
Yeah.
You don't want to be dominating people and standing highly above them and towering over them. It makes them feel small and probably enhances the likelihood of them engaging with bad behaviors or behaviors we don't want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That shame or that guilt that can be coming, what comes off as compassion and empathy from us, it could be, they could be perceiving it as shame.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I want to go back a few more minutes here too. You said something and I want to dive into it for a few minutes so nobody's confused here, because you said when calories and protein are equated, the person that sleeps 6 hours versus the person that sleeps 8 hours, the person that has eight hours of sleep is probably going to have better body composition.
Yes.
Why is that?
This has actually been studied. And it's one of those studies that when you look through it, it's a Scandinavian study. I want to say Sweden, but I'm not sure. But I've seen it many times, and it makes the circulation through the evidence-based fitness community. And I think the reason, simply put, why if you get more sleep, you will benefit, you'll have more lean mass, you'll retain more muscle. And then if you don't get enough sleep, it has to do a lot with the recuperation and restorative processes that happen while we sleep. Like if you're eating enough food or not, let's say you're not eating enough food and you're in a deficit, like your body's going to lose tissue from bone, muscle, and fat. Mm-hmm. But if you lift weights, it'll lose less muscle and bone. If you eat enough protein, it'll lose way less muscle and bone. And if you eat enough protein, lift, and get sleep, it won't lose much at all. And so I think what's happening in these studies is better quality sleep means more lean mass retention when you're in a state of caloric restriction. And that points us in the direction of, hey, if we want most of the weight we lose to come from fat tissue and not muscle tissue,
right,
we need to give that muscle every reason possible to stick around. And the three biggest reasons our muscle will stick around is because it's well fed with protein, well trained with resistance, and well rested with sleep. And so those things, by the way, alcohol fucks up your sleep. So those things are so critical, and sleep is clearly integral to the retention of contractile tissue. When people injure a bone or have a surgery or they're healing, massive swaths of protein like an incision or a fracture or a soft tissue repair, they are sleeping constantly. Our body needs sleep to repair these tissues, especially contractile muscle tissue. So sleep is critical for lean mass retention. And that study is a great indicator of, hey, even when the calories are the same, and even when the protein is the same, and these people are not exercising. So we're equating for one factor, which would be calories. We're equating for another factor, which would be protein. And then we're removing a variable, which would be exercise. Mm-hmm. The thing we're studying now is just this one variable, sleep.
And it's good
control. It's perfect. Yeah. And the results are really astounding, and it makes you go, shit, if you are operating in a fat loss mindset and that's your goal, sleep is right up there with your training and your nutrition in terms of its importance as a variable.
Mm-hmm. Not only for those direct reasons, but then the indirect reasons too.
All
right?
The like indirect reasons.
Higher hunger from getting a poor night's sleep.
Willpower, discipline, recovery, sex hormones, androgens, growth hormone, insulin sensitivity, cognitive function. It's meta. It is, I think, and this is probably like the hottest take ever, it's probably as important as exercise.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. It's all encompassing. You can't, and that's the thing, like we can't just focus on one thing. If we could only focus on a few things, you just painted a really clear picture of what we should be focusing, I feel like, focusing on. But it's just that balance. It's that balanced lifestyle really is what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
Easier said than done.
So much easier said than done. So much easier said than done. The stress management piece alone is one of the most difficult things to ever do, which is why people turn to alcohol, right?
Yep.
Beat me to it.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, it makes you more stressed in the end. It's like they're using it for stress relief, but then in the end, it's actually a fucking stressor.
A lot of our copes are really negative feedback loops in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're negative positive feedback loops where it's like, I do the thing I don't like, then I cope with this thing, and it's just this cycle.
A circle, yeah.
Like it's they feel better in that moment, right? Like,
right.
There's no, I don't think there's any denying if you, after a long day, you do, after, and if the drink is your thing, you have a glass of whiskey, that does help you feel better in that moment. But we know later, it's not necessarily true.
No, and yeah. The biggest reason we struggle with obesity is because the most accessible tool for coping with emotional regulation and emotional disruption is food.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that yeah. alcohol and food often go together.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it helps
for
you.
Sure.
If you just focus on one at a time, it can be a little easier. It's another great reason for people to like start with alcohol or work their way there.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I've actually seen, because we work with a lot of clients on repairing their relationship with food. So we kind of along those same lines, when they start repairing their relationship with food, a lot of the times their relationship with alcohol improves as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
I know, Beth, you get that a lot, right? Like, mm-hmm. I repaired my relationship with food, and I started working with you, and did this, and now I'm not drinking anymore. I've been 90
Yeah, a lot of people have yeah. limited or gave up alcohol. It's mm-hmm. incredible, actually. I love it.
It is such a great, it often happens downstream of other fitness progress. I'm doing well. I'm feeling good. I'm like mm-hmm. engaging in self-love and behaviors yeah. that promote healing and, mm-hmm. and succeeding and thriving. And then I have this one thing that I do that like
right.
is antithetical to that. And so I brought it down and now I'm drinking less because like, yeah. how crazy is it to drink when you're so invested in your well-being?
Yeah.
It's sometimes for people, it's really downstream. For some people, it can be like the head of the stream. It's what they start with.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends on how emotionally connected they are and how much yeah. they identify as someone who has to drink.
Right. Exactly. What an incredible conversation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about that. Thank you guys. Really?
No, absolutely. This has been really awesome. I can't believe the hour flew by like that.
Yeah, I really enjoy talking to you guys. Like I said at the beginning, I get to the fact that this is what I do to have a good life. I get to do this is fucking sick. And I really like talking shop. Fitness yeah. is my forever passion. And I really appreciate the chance to chat with you guys. I love what you're doing.
Thanks.
Oh, yeah, man.
Same.
We appreciate it.
Feelings mutual.
Absolutely.
So, Danny, if people want to reach out to you, find you, can you let us know, like, what you got going on, where people can find you?
Yeah, I think, like, most of you and most of the fitness community, I'm on Instagram. It's just my name. I'm on YouTube. It's just my name. I'm on X. I almost called it Twitter. It's just my name. I have a podcast, which is just my name. So, you know,
easy.
I mean, I'm on the internet and
we'll make it easy for people to find you
in none of the bad places. So that's good. I'm, no registries, no crazy like that. I'm on social media and shit.
Right on.
Oh, that's too funny.
We appreciate it, man. It's been an awesome conversation.
Thank you guys.
Oh, you know what I want to ask? What is the name of your gym?
Oh,
if
yeah.
If people wanted to find you, where you live.
Yes. I it's Core Coaching Method. That's what I was actually going to say. If you actually want to find me, just come to town and let's work out.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Sick.
Awesome. Thanks so much for coming on, Danny.
Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Hope you enjoyed this episode. So why not share with a friend who needs to hear it? Send us a DM on Instagram or email us at cutthecrappod@gmail.com and join our Patreon at patreon.com/cutthecrappodcast. As always, we appreciate you and thanks for being here.